In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we talk about the two big holiday releases this year, Les Miserables and Django Unchained. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. So hello. This is our third episode in one recording session.
Yeah.
And the one I know we've been all been waiting to talk about.
I think two of the most anticipated movies of the year, if not the award season.
Yeah. I mean, Les Mis is one they've been hyping for quite a long time, and one that we got to see relatively early, mm-hmm. which made it really hard for us to not talk about it. We managed it, though.
Yes.
I think somehow. There may have been clues in my behaviour as to how I felt about the movie.
What, the fact that you donned a dress and cut your hair and sang every day?
There was that. But perhaps also the fact that I acquired one or two of the soundtrack theme songs. Actually, not from this cast, though, because they're not available yet. Yeah. I had to buy them off iTunes. Anyway, so let's talk about Les Miserables. Yazdi?
Yes.
Yazdi, tell us all about Les Mis.
So this is the latest big screen adaptation of the highly popular stage show Les Mis, which in turn was based on the novel of the same name by Victor Hugo. Set during the French Revolution, this story scans two generations in the lives of many characters, chief amongst which is Jean Valjean, a man imprisoned for stealing a loaf of bread, who escapes parole and builds a new life for himself. Across years and years, he's being pursued by police officer Javert, who is determined to make Valjean pay for his transgression. Valjean takes in the guardianship of an orphan girl, Cosette, watches her grow up and fall in love with a man at the forefront of the French Revolution. And that's only the main characters. This musical stars Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe, Anne Hathaway, Amanda Seyfried, Sacha Baron Cohen, Helena Bonham Carter, Samantha Barks, and Eddie Redmayne. It's directed by Tom Hopper, previously of The King's Speech fame, and is arriving in theaters with a lot of anticipation. What did you guys think about it? I'm very anxious to know.
Okay, I'll go first. So many years ago, we watched the musical in London, and I really didn't understand the story, and I really didn't enjoy it. I wasn't actually excited to see this film until Joe made me watch the 1998 version of the film starring Liam Neeson, which was really good, and I finally got it. So this film had a lot to live up to in my mind, because I loved that 1998 version so much. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed. This didn't add anything to that 1998 version, which isn't a sing-song version. And I don't think it really topped the stage play.
So it could have been shorter. But overall, I think this was as effective a film adaptation of the stage play as I think is possible. I think the real problem with Les Mis is that it's a 1,400-page novel. It's one of the grand pieces of literature from France, Victor Hugo. And so to make it palatable in one sitting, I think you have to make sacrifices. You can do what they did in 1998, which is they made selective cuts and certain contrivances in the story to make the main themes come through. Mm-hmm. Or you can try and cram it all in and hope that the audience keeps up. And when you compound that with the fact that much of the story is told through song, it becomes very hard to follow for those that don't know the story intimately. And I think that's the problem that you had with the musical.
Correct.
That said, the music from this musical contains so many epic and grand songs. The melodies are ones that just stay with me. I find myself singing them over and over again. I felt the same way when we saw the stage play. And I just think, you know, in many ways, it's kind of like a modern opera. You need to know what's going on before you see the story so that you can follow the story and enjoy the music. And coming at it from that angle, which I did, I really found that this was it had some problems, but I really found this to be a very enjoyable movie watching experience.
I'm really interested to see what Yazdi says, because you didn't know anything about this going in.
So that's exactly my point. Like you, Rashmi, I need to start with a disclaimer as well that I have not seen the Broadway show or any other adaptation thereof. I didn't know anything about the characters based on the original Victor Hugo novel, and I wasn't familiar with any of the music from the show. So here's my reaction to the film. It did absolutely nothing for me. Not one bit. It was like watching a show about the movement of planets in the solar system. I was that detached and uninvolved with what was happening. And I really tried to get into it, but no avail. My feelings about this movie are similar to my feelings for Pluto or Uranus. I have none. This movie did nothing for me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, you know what? I knew that Yazdi would react that way. Because that's exactly how it was for me watching the stage show. And I think with no information, This is really a hard film to watch. Now, what's interesting is for me, a successful musical, you need really good singers. And although moments of singing were good, it just didn't hit the mark for me. And I think as a standalone movie, you lose a lot of the story when it's sung to you. Because everything has to be sung. And I think where it really failed for me was Russell Crowe as Javert.
Yeah.
Because it was awful acting, bad singing, and as a character, he just wasn't bad or mean enough.
I have opinions.
And that's inherently where the movie failed, because it's about that relationship between Javert and Valjean, Jean Valjean. And Russell Crowe just wasn't as mean as he needed to be.
Yeah, I think that the stage adaptation of the character of Javert is underwritten. And when you know the story reasonably well, you understand that the central theme of the movie is that pursuit by Javert of Jean Valjean, the lack of forgiveness. But you know, Javert's motivations are essentially that he's such a principled man.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's completely unhindered by any kind of sympathy or empathy for characters. He believes in the rules, and he believes the rules need to be followed, and that people are beyond redemption. That doesn't come through in this story, I think, as well as it could. And it's a very strong theme of that book. And also the 1998 Liam Neeson movie.
Which is brilliant. So Yazdi watched that.
Jeffrey Rush is the Inspector Javert in that one. So I do think that failed to come through. And he was vocally weaker than the others. I mean, I think Hugh Jackman was terrific. And Hathaway was amazing. But Crow was really difficult. So can we talk about Anne Hathaway in particular?
Before we do that, I do think actually Russell Crowe is, I think he's more than, he's not even passable. I think he's an embarrassment.
Yes.
I mean, he's unable to hide his contempt for the style of singing which is forced upon him. I mean, he has to do this musical theater stuff. And I could actually sense how extremely uncomfortable he was singing that way in every single time
because
he was singing.
Because we were uncomfortable watching it.
So I think Russell Crowe was a really poor choice there. I mean, you know, I know he has a rock band and everything and he's a singer, but I don't know if he auditioned for it or if they went after him, but it was a poor choice.
Right, Mick Jagger would have been better. Oh. And that kind of tells you how bad Russell Crowe was. I mean, you could have stuck Mick Jagger in that role and he would have done a better job. Yeah.
And before we get into the acting, I also wanted to talk about something you said, Rashmi, which is, you know, it's not that I don't like musicals. I mean, Singing in the Rain would be a movie I would take with me on a desert island, right? And I probably know every single word and lyric of The Sound of Music. So I like musicals. But I think this one makes a particular deliberate choice that to have no spoken word.
Right.
Every single piece of dialogue is sung.
I think there are five words.
No, I don't even think there are five words.
But that's because this is a Broadway show.
Yeah, but they could have decided not to do it that way, but
Chicago.
But you know, what happens is somebody sings, "I am sad. Why are you sad? Because I'm feeling sad." I mean, it just becomes laughable. I mean, it's just like, I could not, I mean, I couldn't get into it. I was just like, no, they can't possibly be singing, you know, that. It just didn't work. Anyway.
Your singing was pretty good.
That was good.
You know, I always bust Yazdi's balls for not being able to sing, but that was pretty good.
That was extremely soulful.
It was.
I think I have goosebumps.
But it was just laughable for me. But anyway, let's go into the acting.
Yeah, I mean, this is hard to do in my mind because, you know, acting while singing requires a certain amount of talent in both and a certain amount of comfort doing both. This is a great year for Anne Hathaway. And I think what she did here in this movie, you know, is a gift of a role. You know, I'll give her that. You know, the Fantine role is one of the more harrowed characters in this entire story. So she did have a lot to work with there. But wow, I mean, that whole Dream the Dream, the song, the famous song from Les Miserables, just, you know, it had me choked up. And I know this song. I've seen this song. And you sing
the song while walking around the house.
It did. It affected me deeply. quite why I'm not so sure. Was it the music? Was it Hathaway? Was it both? But she convinced me in every which way that was important. And, you know, I see there's awards aplenty for her come next year when we start giving out.
No, I'll give you, she's a good actress, but I think the song is really very moving, but her singing the song didn't do it for me. And I just don't feel like she had the power of voice to carry it.
No, nonsense.
But okay. You know, the other thing is, I think, you know, clearly like you, Joe, this film is going to appeal to a ton of people and it's epic. I mean, it's an epic spectacle, but it lacked magic for me. And I think that the live singing was really impressive. So recall that in this movie, they made a choice not to do the singing in the studio prior and have the actors lip sync to it. The actors are actually singing live to this. So that's very impressive. And it's not easy to singy act. So I think technically it's difficult. But when I think about films like Chicago, which I loved, this was way worse. And then when I think about Mamma Mia, which was awful, this was only marginally better.
Yeah, I think they made a deliberate decision to, you know, have this live singing, which is good for them. But then, you know, Hopper does this thing where, you know, for any of these big musical numbers, the camera gets really close, like I'm talking about, within an inch of the face of the person who's singing it, and sticks there until they finish singing it, which is amazing the first time. And then impressive the second time, and then really annoying from the third time onwards. I mean, there are like 34 musical numbers in this. I think in this, it's a long movie. There's a lot of music here. And every single musical number is shot the same way. You know, with the camera getting very close to that person and just sticking over there and you know, try something different. So
And I think what makes that very jarring, I'll let you finish your point in a second, but the rest of the movie often relies on these very fast cuts to depict action. Mm-hmm. So especially, you know, it bothered me in the opening scene when they're pulling the ship in, and it was like cut, 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 cut. I was like, stop cutting. I want to look at somebody just for 1 second.
Right.
And then you get to these songs and it's a full on in somebody's face for one take. I mean, that's the point I think they were trying to make. Yeah. It's like the actor here sang this song. We did it in one shot and this is it. And I get that and I get the beauty of it, but it was jarring.
Yeah, and I understand that when you're bringing a stage play to the big screen, that's one thing you can do. You can get in the face of someone, which you can't do obviously in a live theater. But I wish they would have used it judiciously and not just kept doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And you know, Anne Hathaway, you know, I think she deserves a Best Supporting Actor nomination, but not for this movie. I think she deserves it for The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
And you know, and like you, Rashmi, I think she's a good singer, and she does a phenomenal job with that big number. But I did not believe her character. I did not believe for a minute that she was, you know, it just seemed like Anne Hathaway was getting a haircut on stage and she was emoting. Just like, you know, poor Hugh Jackman, he sings his heart out. But for a minute, I did not believe this was a character going through all these troubles.
Right.
So I think that more than anything else just, you know, took me out of the movie.
But well, plainly, you're both wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, okay. So the other thing, not to beat on this movie, I didn't like the B story with Sacha Baron Cohen and Helena Bonham Carter.
I liked them.
It was, again, comedy for the sake of comedy where it didn't need to be there.
Well, again, let's remember that this is the adaptation of a stage play and those exact scenes were in the stage play, those songs, those characters. So there wasn't necessarily a lot of choice here by the screenwriters to do anything. If you're going to adapt this movie, do that. I think therein lies one of the problems with this particular adaptation of Les Miserables, because it was cut from the 1998 movie simply because it didn't add to the central theme of the movie. It was ancillary, and it's the kind of thing that you can do in a meandering 1400 page epic novel. You can explore these side stories, but it just seemed to me like something that was not necessarily needed for a short depiction. It was a distraction.
Yeah. And then final thing is, I don't get that why, when this is such an epic French novel, is everything done in an English accent? It just bugs me. Accents bug me.
Was there an English?
Victor Hugo wrote it. It's a classic.
No, I understand. But was there? Who had an English accent?
Everyone was in an English accent.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
English players in an English accent.
I know why.
Why?
The musical was a West End musical to start with. It was in London.
Yeah, it
comes from London.
Fair enough. Okay, let's wind this one up.
Yeah.
Joe, let's start.
Start on a high note.
Start on a high note, yeah.
So, like I said at the beginning, I think it could have been shorter. But overall, if you're looking at the pure adaptation of a West End, Broadway, whatever you want to call it, musical to the screen, I think this was as done as well as this particular story can be done. I don't see how they could have improved it. I like the filmmaking with the acting. The fact that I understood this story really well helped so much in terms of making sense of what was going on. So then I could focus more on the music and the production and have a more enjoyable experience. So I think if you're a fan of the stage production, or if you're a hardcore fan of musicals in general, I think you should see this. Everyone else needs to think really carefully, because 3 hours is a long time to be stuck in a theater if you're not going to engage with this. And I think, you know, don't just go and see it because it's Les Mis and it's a big Christmas picture. Think carefully. See, read the Wikipedia synopsis of the story before you go in. I mean, if nothing else, know what the plot is, because you won't get it from the movie alone. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. I love this story. I like the musical. I love this music, and I enjoyed this adaptation.
Yes, Dee.
So I've had greater emotional connection with the Macy's floats in a Thanksgiving Day parade than with any of the characters in this film. I did not believe any of them. I didn't believe in the story either. And the last hour of the film was pure torture. I could not wait for this movie to end. I'm sorry I give it a 4 out of 10. And even that seems generous.
I think that's your lowest score ever.
Yeah, I just did nothing for me.
Yeah, so I would, again, echo what Joe said. If you're on the fence about musicals generally, don't bother with this. Watch the 1998 film version instead. The story's better and the acting outclasses it as it is in this one. However, if you're a fan of the book or the play, or you're Joe, then you have to watch this movie. So I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I can see where you come from. And
maybe I should watch it again or listen to the soundtrack.
You know what? Watch the 1998. Yeah. It's on Netflix.
Yeah. I think the singing, the part that everything is sung really bothered me.
But it is a musical. Yeah. And I think, you know, they made that choice. You're right. They could have gone a slightly different way. But and the other thing, just to be brief, is the songs in this are beautiful.
Yeah, the music is.
I really connect with the music. All of the themes, they have many kind of themes that repeat and recur in different parts of the movie. It's all goosebump music for me. I mean, every single bit of it is just, oh, that's so beautiful. So, yeah, modern opera is what I think this is. All right, let's move on to the movie Django Unchained, which I will introduce very briefly.
And I'm the only one that saw this one. I was the only one lucky enough.
To catch, they had only one screening on a Friday morning, and that was it.
So Django Unchained is the latest movie from notorious director Quentin Tarantino. The movie stars Jamie Foxx, Leo DiCaprio, and a whole host of other people that he's worked with before, including Samuel L. Jackson, Christoph Waltz, among the big names. But you also have cameos, I guess, by Kurt Russell, Kevin Costner, and the list goes on. It's set in the South 2 years before the Civil War, and it's about a slave whose brutal history with his former owners lands him face-to-face with German-born bounty hunter Dr. King Schultz. Schultz is on the trail of the murderous Brittle brothers, and only Django can lead him to his bounty. Rashmi.
Okay, so I'll try not to monologue, but I know we're short for time, so I'll get through this. So after Inglourious Basterds, which is one of my favorite films of all time, I didn't think it was possible to see another good Tarantino. But he does it again. And I know I'm unbiased, but he does it again. This is Tarantino giving us his best yet again. I mean, it's brilliant. And, you know, in my mind, it was
You're totally biased, by the way.
I'm totally, unbiased. I know, I said that. I'm not unbiased with this. I'm not unbiased. I love Tarantino. I mean, but in my mind, it's also hard to compete with, you know, the Coen brothers' 2010 True Grit, which was another Western in the modern time. So I was kind of thinking, how is Tarantino going to do spaghetti Western? But he did it so well.
So his movies are all about genre and playing...
Or not genre,
and
yeah.
And playing with that whole theme. How did it feel? Because you're not a fan of Westerns in general,
no.
So...
No, I'm not. It was just... It's a great story. This whole story of Django Unchained, it's a really, really great story. And it's got unexpected twists. It's got great acting. And he does all of that stuff with, you know, a great soundtrack behind it.
Is it revisionist? Like, does it rewrite history like Inglourious Basterds did?
No. I mean, it plays. It's playful. I mean, you know, Tarantino, I think, is so good at pushing our buttons, but he does it in such a playful way. I can't even imagine. I didn't even count. I ran out of counting the number of times he manages to get the N-word in.
And is it violent?
It's really violent.
What do you think, Joe?
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing.
This is disgustingly violent.
Thing, yeah. But, you know.
This is more violent than I've ever seen him do. It's disgustingly violent.
What? I bet the end is just a bloodbath.
Yeah, it is.
I think the end is absolutely just a bloodbath.
More so than Kill Bill?
Because in Kill Bill...
More so than the crazy 88 scene.
Yeah, I was just going to come to that. So the crazy 88 scene in Kill Bill was somewhat muted because he did it in black and white. This is in full glorious Technicolor.
It's a revenge story at its heart, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he's going to...
In fact, there is a scene which is almost like the crazy 88 scene. But it's, like I said, it's in color. My only criticism, and I had to really, really rack my brains to come up with one, was it's just too long. It's 2 hours and 46 minutes. And wow. I think that it's a little bit too long. And I think the fact that I really needed to pee, I could not find a moment that I wanted to leave my seat, but I was desperate. So I had to run out and run back in again, which I never do. But 2 hours and 46 minutes. Don't drink coffee before you go in. Don't take a drink in with you. Just suffer through it.
Wow. Now, how was Jamie Foxx? Because he's not an actor that I have a great affinity for.
Yeah. It's an odd choice.
And to see him as the lead.
Yeah. So acting, I am definite there will be Oscar nods for people in this movie. So obviously, Jamie Foxx, it's a very subtle role and he manages to pull it off. I don't really like Jamie Foxx that much.
Subtle role in the Tarantino film?
Yeah, he manages to play it quietly and in a thoughtful way, I think. Hmm. And I think for that, he'll get recognition. Plus the material itself, the fact that he's playing a freed slave, I think will get him some recognition. But this is a difficult year, I think, for best leading actor in a motion picture. So I think the competition is going to be fierce. Now, I did not think that it was possible to outdo Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds, but Christoph Waltz outdid Christoph Waltz. He is... amazing in this role. He steals the movie. I mean, this is the movie where Christoph Waltz gets to show off again.
So he's an interesting actor to me because I've seen his work without Tarantino and I don't find him very compelling as an on-screen presence. We saw him in Water for Elephants, also The Green Hornet, neither of which were very strong movies. But
both films were pants overall.
Right, but he didn't strike me as... somebody who, well, okay, I'll say it the other way around. He struck me as somebody that almost, you know, needs strong direction in order to bring out his talent. And nobody's bad in a Tarantino movie. I say this oftentimes, but when anyone that's in a Tarantino movie is suddenly transformed from a mediocre actor or perhaps an actor you've never heard of to somebody who is... has a career rebirth or is suddenly an amazing...
Watch out for Don Johnson. Don Johnson of Miami Vice, who I loved and was my future ex-husband when I was 12, is in this movie and he's brilliant in this movie.
But is that because he's a brilliant actor? Because nothing else he's done makes me think of him as a brilliant
actor.
Miami
Vice was amazing. What are you talking about?
He's talking about Christoph Waltz. Are you talking about Christoph Waltz?
Well, Don Johnson, yeah.
Both. I mean, anyone... Is it Tarantino's clarity of vision that brings these performances? You know, like Tarantino, I think, is one of these directors that really knows what he wants to happen on screen.
Yeah.
And I think he pushes the actors to deliver lines in the way that he wrote them, he envisaged them, and I think they practice that stuff and he directs the crap out of them. Is that the case here?
Yes.
Or is it that Christoph Waltz is really, truly a talent that doesn't get a chance in other movies?
I think both. I think that, you know, Tarantino provides material that they can really get their teeth into. And I think the fact that Tarantino doesn't shy away from not necessarily rewriting history, Yazdi, to your point, but he makes us feel so uncomfortable with American racism of years gone by. I think when you have that sort of material, it allows you a bit more creativity. You can really delve deep as an actor maybe and sink your teeth into it because you get to play controversy in a way. And you know, I think Christoph Waltz is talented. The other one that blew me away was Leonardo DiCaprio. He's great in this movie. And
Does he ever act?
There is an element of overacting.
That's always
my thing
with Leo.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that in this film, it's required. I'm
a big fan of his.
It stands to the heft of the other characters who he's playing with. But the only other thing, the only other criticism is Tarantino, Quentin, you are a great director, but don't act in your own movies.
He seldom does.
He seldom does, but he came back in this one. Okay. I think it's because he saw everyone else was having such a great time. He wanted to be part of the fun, but don't. Don't do it in the future.
Yeah, the San Diego Film Critics, as part of the year-end voting, were talking about this movie, and I hadn't seen it, but a lot of people mentioned how Christoph Waltz is kind of the conscience of the movie in a way. And like you, Rashmi, I'm so impressed with Christoph Waltz's work in Inglourious Basterds. I mean, he speaks five different languages and he's so evil and yet so intelligent, and that's such a high bar. I find it hard to believe that he would top it in another role where he didn't have to speak five languages and didn't have to be so evil. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this.
It's way more comical and playful. This is way like this has you laughing in really strange places. Like literally the audience is laughing. So I'll wrap this one up because I know we're short for time. So, you know, I am generally unbiased when it comes to Tarantino, but you know, this is a great movie overall. And the fact that it's too long reduces it by one point for me. And the fact that Tarantino appears, you know, it's not great. I would have given this a 10 out of 10. The fact that it's 2 hours and 46 minutes reduced it by half a point. But I know we're not allowed halves. So 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Okay.
I love this movie.
Yeah, it's running 100% on a Tomatometer after 28 reviews. So that's... You're not alone in loving it.
Tarantino is just... He's incredible.
Now, is there anything new here? Because Inglourious, to me, was a little bit of a departure. I accuse many of his movies being kind of, you know, more of the same. And it's like, you know, the same good stuff, but more of the same. Is this...
This is more akin to Inglourious Basterds than it is to Kill Bill or Jackie Brown or...
Jackie Brown's actually my favorite Tarantino movie.
It's not like Jackie... You know, the things with Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, they're set in modern times. I think the difference between Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained is they're historical.
Period pieces.
Yeah, they're period pieces. So I think just in that, it's... My God, I honestly loved True Grit by the Coen brothers, and I think they did a really good job of modernizing Western. This is so good. And I didn't even mention Kerry Washington and all the other people that are in this movie. Samuel L. Jackson, this is a role that I've never seen him do before. You know, this isn't Samuel L. Jackson of Pulp Fiction. This is, so good.
I mean, annoying and as insufferable as Quentin Tarantino is, I think it would be an awful darn shame if this was the last movie he made, because he keeps threatening to retire. But he's, you know, I don't want to spend 2 minutes with him. I just want to watch every single movie he makes. So, I wish he would keep making the movies. And I can't wait to watch this when it opens. I think it opens on Christmas Day, right?
Yeah. I know. I mean,
he doesn't want to make a bad movie. And I think that insecurity, when you've set the bar so high for yourself, everyone's waiting for the one movie when... they can say, he's lost his touch.
And not just that, you know, when we think about Joe, you know, I remember in the last episode you were talking about, you know, dialogue and Judd Apatow. This doesn't even hold, you know, he doesn't even hold a flame to anything Tarantino does with dialogue. Tarantino's dialogue is just, it's clever, it's witty, it's engaging, it's thrilling, it's comical, it's smart.
You know,
it's...
The Hollywood Reporter had this forum for all the directors this year who are likely to be nominated, and had Quentin Tarantino on it, and he was saying the same thing, that every script that he writes it like a novel, and he says it takes so much out of him. It takes him years and years, and he says now he's at a point where he's so exhausted after he's just, you know, put the script out, that he doesn't have the energy to now translate it into a movie. Right. So he's like, in future, I may just release my scripts as books, and that's all I want to do, because, you know, so much of what he does, just, he says that in itself is a piece of work.
It is.
And then you have to take it and then visualize it and make a movie out of it. And he just says it takes too much out of him.
Right. I would read every novel he put out. I hope if he does retire, then he writes novels, and I would buy every single one because I love him.
Okay. All right. Well, let's wrap up this episode. mail@movierollers.com. Let us know what you think of these movies. twitter.com/movierollers and facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until next time, it's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.